This is Free Talk Live. Your calls and thoughts welcome about whatever is on your mind. We're actually starting with some big news out of Puerto Rico, where that territory has been in debt for many, many years. And
many moons.
Yes, also many moons, because there are several moons in a year.
And really kind of a setup. You know what I mean? Just the way it was organized and the regulations that the U.S. put in place around Puerto Rico.
Right. And
it was kind of inevitable to me.
So before we get into the story, Heather, that you brought in, I want to give a little bit of history, if you will.
Sure, go for it.
Because, you know, most people realize that Puerto Rico is a territory. Some people don't realize that. I remember when I worked for an airline, somebody was like, oh, don't I need a passport to go to Puerto Rico?
How long has it been a territory?
Since 1898.
Was that when we...
that's when Spain wound up ceding Puerto Rico and Cuba and the Philippines and several other places to the U.S. at the end of the Spanish-American War. And Cuba and Philippines ultimately wound up getting independence. Puerto Rico, not so much.
Yeah, and I think you and I both agree that the Spanish-American War was sort of the jumping point for American imperialism. Would you,
I disagree with that.
Okay.
Only because I think American imperialism started about 95 years prior with the purchase of the Louisiana Purchase.
Okay, there you go. But it really was, to me, it was the first time we'd really, it was American adventurism. We're going to go out and we're going to sort of pick a fight and then seize a bunch of stuff.
Certainly. So because Puerto Rico is a territory and not a state, Congress, over the last 100 years or so, has wound up making some exemptions for Puerto Rico and then ultimately repealing some of those exemptions. From the Wiki article on the Puerto Rican government debt crisis, they mentioned the Jones-Schaffert Act, which exempted Puerto Ricans from paying federal income tax and provided a tax credit that allowed U.S. companies to effectively operate on the island tax-free. The act exempted interest payments from bonds issued by the government of Puerto Rico and its subdivisions from federal, state, and local income tax, regardless of where the bondholder resided. And this is very important, because a lot of the debt that Puerto Rico now has is from the sale of these various municipal bonds. Right. And back in, skipping down here a little bit, I believe it was the late 90s, early aughts, the tax credit was eliminated, causing the island to lose about 80,000 jobs. The population shrank and the economy began to contract. It was not until Puerto Rico enlarged its outstanding debt to $71 billion, an amount approximately equal to 68% of the island's GDP, that Puerto Rican bonds were downgraded to non-investment grade, better known as junk bonds. And that happened in 2014, and over the last couple of years, people and various officials in Puerto Rico have been begging the U.S. Congress to allow them to file Chapter 9 bankruptcy, something that they are not allowed to do. So Congress wound up coming to a compromise last year and passing something called the Puerto Rico Oversight, Management, and Economic Stability Act, or PROMESA. And this allows some form of bankruptcy. And Heather, this is where your story begins.
Okay. So this story actually comes from USA Today. It's titled Puerto Rico Declares Bankruptcy. And here's how it's going to unfold. Facing mountainous debt and population loss, the board overseeing Puerto Rico filed Wednesday for the equivalent of bankruptcy protection in a historic move that's sure to trigger a fierce legal battle with the fate of the island's citizens, creditors, and workers at stake. The oversight board appointed to lead the U.S. territory back to fiscal sustainability declared in a court filing that it is unable to provide its citizens effective services. Crushed by $74 billion in debts and $49 billion in pension liabilities, which is what I had asked Daryl earlier, is pension liabilities, specifically government employee pensions, is that where that $49 billion comes from, or is that Social Security too?
Social Security is different from pensions,
right.
And I am not entirely positive, but I'm fairly certain that the pension liability is in addition to the debt.
The way it's written, it is. It says $74 billion in debts and $49 billion in pension liabilities.
Right. So if you look at the U.S. federal government, where you know we know that the national debt is about $20 trillion, and then there's about another $100 trillion of unfunded liabilities.
Well, there's $76 billion or something just from the number of people that are going to be turning 65 and eligible to collect Social Security over the next, like, decade, I think. So it puts our national debt up to, like, 70-something trillion because I sold Medicare supplements.
I'm not sure exactly what the numbers are, but it's a ticking time bomb,
yeah.
Just like Puerto Rico's has been. So mm-hmm. I would suspect, too, that those are probably government worker pensions.
Yes.
Number one. Number two, this is government speak. We'll talk about how much we have in one column of the ledger as far as our balances go. But we're going to completely ignore this other part where it's the stuff that we've rang up, but it hasn't really due yet, so we're not counting it.
Right.
That's our unfunded liabilities.
The unfunded liabilities of here's all the stuff that we know we have to buy, but we've not actually borrowed money for yet. So let's put this in.
I don't think that government employees should even, like, why don't they invest in their own retirement funds like everybody else?
Well, they do kind of invest in a retirement fund, but that retirement fund is basically in the form of these municipal bonds that up until about a decade ago were doing pretty good in Puerto Rico, to where, you know, governments around the country were just, you know, investing in these municipal bonds to where, oh, it's just this very easy way to earn some interest.
And when you put government in charge of coming up with government's retirement plan or government's benefit package, somehow they always get these really, really, really great deals.
Well, yes. A friend of mine that actually works for one of the prisons in Massachusetts, he's like one of the security guards.
I was
telling him, I'm like, is that really what you want to do for like the rest of your life? And he's like, well, like the pension that I'm going to have when I get out of this place is going to be like,
oh yeah,
so great. And I'm thinking like, I don't know, man, the way this country's headed, I wouldn't bank on it.
So let me try to explain this unfunded liability in an individual manner. It would be akin to you have $80,000 worth of credit card debt. You're bringing in about $75,000 a year, and you know that your light bill is due for the next 3 months. You've not gotten the bill yet, and you've not borrowed money for the bill yet, but you know that it's due. So that's an unfunded liability of things that you know you have to pay for that you've not either paid or borrowed money for yet.
And in government's case, they'll just continue to spend recklessly, unlike you or me who might go, oh boy, I got that electric.
Right.
I like light. I like heat in my house.
Now, do you feel like when it comes to things like Social Security and stuff like that, like people obviously paid into those, right? So do you feel like they should like that as far as, because it's like government, even though it's funded by taxation, which is essentially theft because
understand.
You don't have, you know what I mean? But at the same time, do you think promises made by the government to that extent, like, oh, if you give us X amount of dollars, we'll pay you this for the next 20 years. Do you think the people that...
Well, the thing, and we'll continue the discussion on Social Security, but it's not something that people are voluntarily opting into. It's government stealing money and saying, we'll pay you back
at a later
date. Someone
has told me that you can opt out of it, though. Is that true?
We'll talk. Not as far as I know. We'll cover it after this.
It's incredibly difficult to opt out of and basically requires you to be a recluse of some sort. Your calls and thoughts welcome. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we'll get to your calls in just a second. And we know that the government of Puerto Rico is messed up because that's what we've been talking about. But you know what else is messed up? The healthcare system in the United States. We need a healthcare system that focuses on health, not sickness. Sure, health insurance pays for treating sickness, but it gives you nothing for being healthy. Doesn't that actually incentivize illness instead of health? Well, there is a free market healthcare company that can give you freedom from health insurance. HealthExcellenceSelect.com. They give you a proactive health assessment daily and no charge 24-hour access to doctors. HIPAA has messed up medical records so much that one doctor doesn't know what the other doctors are doing. How about a medical information card that you can give to EMS, first responders, the emergency room, or whatever medical professional you want? Check them out right now at HealthExcellenceSelect.com. Any kind of doctor, traditional, integrative, chiropractic, acupuncture, and massage. You'll love the service and the price. HealthExcellenceSelect.com. Let's go to Skype, where we've got a demo friend of the show, no longer living in New Hampshire for some odd reason, and facing some court stuffs. Ademo, welcome to Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Yeah, not living in New Hampshire, at least for the foreseeable future, just because, like you mentioned, you know, I'm fighting a marijuana case down here in Ohio. And I was bonded out about a month and a half ago, facing two felony charges, one for possession and one for trafficking, stemming from a stop back in February. But, and, you know, and something that I think is a telling sign of the war on drugs and at least in and with marijuana. It seems like the state isn't like too interested in getting to a trial anytime soon. They set my next court date for motions all the way in August, just last week.
Hold on. So, I thought we, you know, had supposedly the right to a speedy trial.
They do. They believe they have 260 days here.
Speedy by whose count is that?
Well, apparently when you're tortoise or the sloth.
Right. I guess when you're in the business of harassing, you know, peaceful people or just users of drugs and shoveling them through as fast as possible, that deadline really is never that big of a deal because – you know, even when I was in jail for 44 days, I watched at least 500 people take some sort of plea deals on drug charges.
So I got to ask, Ademo, I mean, with all this drama and everything you're facing, what were you doing? Were you sitting outside of a grade school rolling joints and giving them away free to kindergartners or something like that?
The youngest, most pliable people possible and latched them on to the gateway drug.
Evils of marijuana. But to be, right. Yeah.
So
and
before
I'm being,
anybody thinks that you're being serious,
and I'm
being
completely facetious, you were driving along. You were driving along, right?
The alleged reason for a stop is because the license plate light was out on my vehicle. And I recently got my discovery, and that video doesn't seem to tell that same exact tale. You know, if anything, it's February. There might be some road dirt on the light where it might be dim.
Or snow.
But it's definitely questionable on whether or not that light, it's definitely not out.
So I'm going to go facetious one more time and say, how many people died along the highways of America, Ademo, because that license plate light was out? Was there a path of destruction, death and destruction behind you?
Well, I have a pretty thick discovery. You know, in terms of this being that type of traffic stop, but there's nothing in there about a victim or a hospital bill of an injured party or what damage the roadway or people on it could have taken. You know, it's not like a piece of my car flew through somebody's windshield.
Exactly.
And I just drove away or anything like that. So there are no actual victims. There's a lot of people who claim to work for the state of Ohio, the county of whatever, and stuff like that, and they all seem to have a commonality amongst them, and that is they all work for the state.
Right.
You know, the alleged man who prevented the crime and saved the community that night, the prosecutor, judge, they all work for the same people. Well, so it's pretty interesting stuff.
Of course, it's, you know, going to be everybody involved as far as the, you know, plaintiff is going to be some government agent because you committed the only real crime that exists, and that is disobeying the state.
Exactly. It's just a way for them to control us. There's no other way really to put it.
It's unfortunate, too, that, you know, the police departments, to a degree, they're just doing their job, but at the same time, because of the way it's set up in most states, there's an incentive for them to keep drugs on the street and to keep harassing people like you for nonviolent crimes because that's what funds their departments.
Right, and the whole, you know, just doing my job thing, that was an excuse that the Nazis used, and the Nuremberg trials said, I'm just doing my job is not a valid excuse for violating people's human rights.
Well, for Nazis, not for police officers.
I hear you. I'd like to take a, you know, if you take a look at it, my example, and this is what I'd expect for a jury to hear one day, if that's where it goes, is that, you know, this alleged illicit product has killed how many people? Zero. You know, this alleged crime harmed how many people? Zero. The alleged person we're accusing of doing this, not the alleged, the person that we're accusing of doing this has harmed how many people in his life? How many people has he harmed besides the zero and zero that we just mentioned? Zero. I've never been accused or convicted of a crime that's harmed somebody else. Used bodily force, stolen their property, deceived them by fraud. And so the jury should ask, do we have prisons built for people who aren't harming anybody ever and who alleged illicit product hasn't harmed anybody?
That's right. Basically who's in prison.
Yeah. Right. Why do we need to do this and further ruin somebody else's life, possibly, and burden all of ourselves and everybody not present, i.e. taxpayers, with, you know, something that's just for the state? You know, there is no win-win-win ever in this equation for the quote-unquote citizen, you know? Right. Not myself as a citizen, not any of the jurors as a citizen, not for any taxpayer in the county or the state of Ohio is benefiting from locking me or anyone they accuse of such things in a cage for these actions. Again, so go ahead.
You mentioned the possibility of bringing some of this before a jury. You will be able to get a jury trial?
I definitely get a jury trial because I'm facing two felonies, F3s. That's like the middle of the road here in Ohio.
Right.
They carry a maximum of 3 years in prison, you know, and that's just pretty absurd that, you know, last year, Ohio nearly passed recreational and did pass a medical marijuana law. And there's several aspects of the medical marijuana law, without getting too lengthy into it, that haven't been implemented yet, though they were tabled to be implemented March 1st by the government. And then they, you know, totally surpassed their due date, still don't have anything. And part of that law is reciprocating other medical marijuana patients from other states,
right,
which I actually am in Colorado.
I'll tell you, this is why I think our lawmakers, quote unquote, should spend more time repealing than they do passing.
Absolutely. Ademo, thank you for the call. Definitely keep us updated as this winds up going through the process. And where can people find out more about your case real quick?
Coplock.org. Search free Ademo.
Coplock.org. Search free Ademo.
Thanks
this
for the
call.
This
is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE.
Everyone has something in their lives or just about themselves that they want to change, from trying to lose weight to becoming more motivated at work. Change is difficult, but the good news is, no matter what, you don't have to go through it alone. Hypnotherapy can help you remove negative subconscious thoughts that keep you from achieving your goals. Never rely on just willpower again. Contact us at afterhourshypnotherapy.com today for your free consultation. Or contact Melvin Marsh at 678-658-8483.
This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we'll get back to the Puerto Rico story in just a moment to Skype, where we've got Liberty Lover calling in. Liberty Lover, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Hey, how are you all tonight?
Good, how are you?
You're on the air. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Good. First of all, I have to correct that last guy who was talking about how, you know, recreational weed almost passed here in Ohio. I remember when that initiative came through, it failed by over 30 points. In fact, there were two issues. There was one that would have allowed for recreational marijuana, and another issue that would have blocked the other one. The one that would have blocked the one with weed going through was voted, and it was really close. But the one that would have just outright legalized recreational marijuana lost by over 30 points. I don't know why he said that it would have almost gone through that.
What do you mean by like 30 points? What does that mean?
Ohio issue 3, it would have allowed for recreational marijuana. It lost by 30 points.
Yeah, but what is, so what there is was points? A 30 is that 30 difference. People? 30
points? 30%. 30% difference, okay, between the yes votes and the no votes.
Yep.
So and it was not close at all. And if I recall correctly, there was a cronyism issue, which basically wound up causing that to fail, correct?
Actually, the bill that would have allowed the cronyism passed, issue 2.
Ah, okay.
Shocker.
Yeah, but the one that would have actually allowed you to, you know, grow it in your backyard as much as you want and smoke it, that failed by a large initiative. I mean, a large amount. I don't know why that would have been. But the main thing I was going to call in was about Social Security. You guys had talked about how, you know, people had paid into that. Well, that's one of the things I get into arguments a lot with my dad over, is he says, I paid in, so I'm entitled to every last bit of that money. And how Social Security shouldn't go away, because it would just screw over all the people that have paid into it.
But that's no different than if I were to invest in retirement with, you know, New York Life, and then all of a sudden New York Life was no longer around and failed at doing business. Is it
that's slight difference is because you had a choice.
Exactly, yeah. But I'm saying that, like, if his choice was to, I mean, well,
you don't really have a choice. If you're working a job where you get a paycheck from some company, you don't have a choice of paying into Social Security.
It's just taken.
If you, you know, there are ways that you can, you know, wind up, quote unquote, opting out of Social Security by working for yourself and then just not filing a tax return or something along those lines, but there's not really a way to where you can just send a letter to Social Security saying, my name is Heather and I don't want to participate. It doesn't work like that.
Well, if you're, I believe, if you're a minister, for example, like if you work for some sort of religious institution, you are able to opt out.
As long as you have some sort of religious grounds. Well, you also have to, as I understand it, and this is not legal advice or financial advice, but my understanding is that even, you know, the select groups of people that opt out for religious reasons still have to provide some sort of documentation that they're investing in some kind of retirement thing, or that there's something in place to provide them.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, a lot of people, we sort of have this feeling that, you know, Social Security is, that's as American as apple pie. Well, it's not like we've had this since the country became a country. We've had this since the FDR. Progressives took control of pretty much the whole country with the Great Depression. And Social Security was supposed to be a temporary measure.
Yes.
And that's it. But now, I mean, if you, God forbid, you bring up doing anything away, it's the third rail of American politics, and you can't talk about it. Heather, to answer your question, yeah, I have no personal issue with anybody getting money back from a government that stole it in the first place, because you're never going to get as much back, but you'll get some of it. But we've got to come up with a way to transition future generations and future workers out of being forced into doing this.
And well, just something very interesting. Apparently, apple pie originated in Western Europe. So apple pie is not even that American.
Oh, come on. The Liberty Lover is going to take issue with my point. I look forward to it. Please.
What I was going to say is when we were talking about Social Security, a lot of people don't understand that it was supposed to be a temporary thing. And to my knowledge, I think income tax was supposed to be as well. And a lot of people,
the mass pike.
Yeah, and much more limited. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the things that everybody tells me when I try to talk about abolishing Social Security is, well, what about, as I said, what about all the people that paid into it? But not only that, a lot of people are like, well, the only reason Social Security is going to fail is because the Republicans keep stealing from it.
That's the really? Biggest lie ever. It's been, if you go back and look through the congressional history of various times that the federal government has dipped into Social Security, it's been when there have been Democratic-controlled Congresses.
So what do you guys think is the easiest way to implement ending the program while giving people a fair enough share of what they paid in without it reaching?
If I were the magic dictator of the United States and I could control everything, I would just refund everybody their money, but you'd have to do that incrementally. One of the ways you right. could do it, I think, would be to allow people to opt out first. Because if you look at all the millennials, if you tell them, hey, by the way, you can keep more of your paycheck and use it on whatever you want, do you realize how many people are going to be like, I want my money now, I want out of this? I, for one, can tell you that I would definitely jump at the shot to do that.
Sure, right.
And the way to pay it back would be, some people could say you could use a monthly system. Other would say one big lump sum, because what you paid in, that wouldn't be a problem, giving it all back in one lump sum, because they clearly have the money, right?
Right.
What are you so afraid of, federal government?
Yeah, that would that would not be pretty. But I know where I definitely agree with you on those points. I think that is the only moral way to tackle this problem, and for the people to never allow your officials to pass such an abomination again. That's the biggest challenge, and I don't know if that'll ever go away.
They're doing their job. Social Security is, to my knowledge, the most approved of government program out there.
It's also the most approved of Ponzi scheme in the history of the world.
I completely agree with you there, Daryl. Their brainwashing seems to be working.
By Ponzi scheme, there might be some people that, you know, aren't really familiar what Ponzi scheme is. Ponzi scheme is a thing to where the early investors are paid by the later investors, and you have to keep, you know, suckering investors in. And then, you know, ultimately you run out of other people's money to be able to pay your early investors.
Well, I was going to say, what do you guys think about, like, raising the retirement age? Because back when Social Security was first, like, introduced, people weren't living as long as they are today. Because medicine and technology's advanced, now people are living into their 80s, 90s, 100s.
Raising the retirement age would be a good temporary step. But shouldn't people determine when they retire on their own?
Thank you.
Yes, there should not. I don't think there should be a government-sanctioned retirement age.
Like, and, if I want to retire.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Nope. Go ahead.
What I was going to say was, if you save early and you have the money to retire at 50, mm-hmm. retire at 50. If you save later and you can retire at 80, you can retire later. But I agree with Daryl. The government should not give you a recommended retirement age where they give you back the money they stole from you in the first place. It seems like just a stupid way to control people's retirements.
And retirement also seems to be, you know, a more recent invention in human history, to where, you know, previously people would just keep working as long as they were able to do so. And now we just sort of expect that at some point you stop working and then you just, you know, live out the rest of your life. And I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, some people wind up dying, is they have no more meaning in life because, well, I'm not doing anything productive.
We got to talk about Ida Mae Fuller.
Ida Mae Fuller, Liberty Lover, I'm not sure if you have more. If so, hang on. Your calls and thoughts, welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. What are your thoughts on Socialist Security? This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And we're talking about Social Security, to where, you know, the claim is you're investing this money and then you're saving for your retirement. Well, how would you like to actually wind up saving money? Well, you can do that with saveatpurse.com. You can save a guaranteed 5% at saveatpurse.com. You can save up to 20, 25, 30%. Up to 33% maximum at saveatpurse.com. Now, the way you save is You put things into an Amazon wish list. You import the wish list into saveatpurse.com. And then, after you select the discount you want, you fund the account with Bitcoin, which crossed over $1,600 at some point earlier today, I believe. It's somewhere still over $1,500. I don't have the figure in front of me, but it's somewhere close to that, and it's just been continuing to rise recently. Saveatpurse.com. Again, you fund the account with Bitcoin, and you can save big. I've been using it for over 2 years, used it about 60 times, and saved well over $500, somewhere close to $600. Saveatpurse.com. Chris, you are going to tell us about Ida Mae Fuller.
I just love the story of Ida Mae Fuller. I'm sorry. So for those of you, we've been talking about Social Security and whether it's moral or immoral to take out money that you've already paid into the system. And I brought up the subject of Ida Mae Fuller. Ida Mae Fuller was the first Social Security recipient. So she was the first one, the first American who ever got a check from the government under the Social Security program.
So she must have, you know, paid into this thing from the time it was created, and
she did
wound up, you know, like,
so let's talk about that.
Paying for, you know, like, her entire life, right?
Well, not her entire life, but she started paying when Social Security began, you know, being taken from her wages. In June of 1937, she had $450 in earnings. And that was, I think, for 6 months or a quarter or something like that. But they docked $4.50 out of her wages.
Okay.
And then, you know, in December 1937, another $4.50 came out. You know, March of 1938, $2.25 contribution. It kind of went on like this until she retired in 1940. And her total contributions into the Social Security program were $24.75.
Okay, so she paid in $24.75, and I'm guessing
she probably got,
you know, she wound up getting like $3 a week from Social Security.
No, her initial check when she filed was $22.54, so $2.21
less than what she had paid in the previous 3 years.
And here's where irony kind of kicks in. Of course, Ida Mae Fuller didn't, you know, die in 1941. She went on to be a centenarian. She lived to be over 100 years old. So Ida Mae Fuller, after contributing $24.75 to Social Security, had, by the time she died, collected a total of $22,888 and 92 cents in Social Security benefits. That is a Ponzi scheme. So
yes,
she was fine, you know, because she was one of the first ones
a
in.
A really good investment.
She was one of the first ones in, and she was one of the first ones out before there was any concern about whether there should be enough money left in this for everyone. But, you know, she banked out. And this is just how Ponzi schemes work. If you get into one and
if you get in early,
if you
and
get
you
in
actually
early,
wind up getting paid.
Right. And if it goes, if it becomes successful and you get out early before the whole thing crumbles, look at the money coming into you. So that was Ida Mae
Liberty Lover,
story.
I'm not sure if you just were, like, you know, loading a gun in the background there.
Oh, sorry. I was putting it back in the corner. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. As long as it's a gun.
Wow,
we're,
good ears, Daryl.
Well, I definitely
heard
something.
We should play a game with Daryl called What's That Sound?
Lock and loaded.
Didn't know if you were getting ready to shoot your computer over, you know, this woman collecting, 22, what was it, 000? About 100 times
oh, no.
what she paid?
Pretty close to that.
I'm glad she screwed the state. I wouldn't be mad at that. No, but it seems like nobody ever talks about the other aspects of Social Security, like disability or supplemental security income.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And those are the payments that go to people that have never paid into the system, the dependents of people. And
I
in
know
some
people
cases,
like
and I remember when I worked hospital security, seeing people that would bring their children into the ER and get the kids diagnosed as ADD, ADHD, and several other things so that the kid could then be classified as disabled so that the parents would then get the disability check on behalf of the kids.
Right. I've been involved in that kind of thing myself. In fact, up until recently, I was collecting it. So I am familiar with that. And that is also an example of fraud, you know. That's an example of people screwing the state. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it also seems like people using their kids as little money makers.
Oh, sure. We have lots of programs to do that.
I mean, the way the state screws everybody else, is, in your opinion, is it like, do you think if we got everybody to just screw the state really, really hard, it would drive us closer to economic collapse and we could just get this whole thing over with? Or should we prolong the inevitable?
It might make the state reconsider their decision and just end Social Security if they're getting screwed.
I mean, so should we encourage as many people as we can to get as much money out of the government as possible?
There are some libertarians that advocate for that. They're like, just go file for every welfare program there is and, you know, just take as much as you can and then cause it to collapse. Yeah. And then there's the people that say, no, you're receiving stolen property. And in theory, they wouldn't be stealing as much money if people weren't going and asking for these handouts of stolen money.
I don't buy that philosophy at all. They would steal your money anyway. Remember, that's all the state cares about is how they can make a buck.
Right, but the question is whether or not they would steal as much if people weren't lining up to accept the stolen money.
I don't necessarily think they would change the laws or of how much is taken in your taxes. I don't know if they change the budget just because less people are receiving it.
Well, I got a theory on that.
If you had a million less people on welfare tomorrow, you would not see a dime put back in anyone's paychecks.
I don't doubt that either, and I guarantee you that then we would have more money for defense spending. You would have somewhere else in the government that money would find its way into.
Right. Some line item would wind up dropping.
Right.
So it does seem like a better idea then to keep encouraging people to take money from the system, because the more it does, the higher it's going to raise the debt and the more it's going to draw issues to, okay, what are we really spending money on?
No.
Let's be real, I remember
back in 1990, what was it, about 93, 94, when the debt hit what I thought at the time was this astronomical number of $4 trillion, and now we've quintupled that.
Sure.
And it doesn't seem like it's going to collapse anytime soon. So I don't think people lining up and saying, give me more, is going to cause it to collapse.
What's odd is that did fuel really the sort of the Gingrich revolution.
Yeah.
When those things happen, because it Newt Gingrich pops up and says, you know, contract with America, we're going to put forward a balanced budget. And then they
use some tricky math to come up with a surplus, even though the national debt increased during that time.
I get it. But it was at least a token effort at fiscal responsibility. Maybe not even. But you know what I mean? At least people were demanding it. And they demanded it of the Republicans, and they demanded it of their sitting president, Clinton.
Well, I'll end the discussion on Social Security like this. How many of you guys love grandmas?
That's right.
I love grandmas. Liberty lover.
I don't know. I like one of my grandmothers. The other one can go to hell.
Wow.
Thank you for the call, Liberty lover. Let's go to Robert.
I have a very evil grandmother.
Let's go to Robert in Vermont. Robert, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Yeah, most of you guys know me because we, you know, hang out at times, but I'm on Social Security disability. Now, there's a difference between Social Security disability or SSD and SSI. SSI is the welfare part of the program. Right. SSD is the disability part of the program. And I believe, when I first learned about how Social Security works and stuff, which was back in the 70s.
Robert, hold that thought, and hopefully hold on over the news. We'll bring you back. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live.
The Libertarian Party of New Hampshire is going out to the ball game, sponsoring the New Hampshire Fisher Cats on June 10th. Join the LPNH in the new pavilion with access to a private portion of the bar and an all-you-can-eat buffet. Tickets are only $40, but need to be purchased by May 9th. Get your tickets at lpnh.org/FTL.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We began the show talking about Puerto Rico, and then we wound up talking about socialist security, and that's where the conversation is continuing, at least for the time being. In studio tonight, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we go back to the phones where we've got Robert in Vermont. Robert held on from the last hour, and you were starting to explain the difference between what they call the SSI and the SSD. Yeah. And what do those two sets of letters stand for again?
Okay, Social Security Supplement Income, SSSI. That comes from, I believe, from your state to where you reside at.
Okay.
And then SSD is Social Security Disability.
Okay, and both of those are separate from the retirement portion of Social Security.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I started work back in the middle 70s, and at first I never really agreed, you know, that Jesus, you know, taking the money out of me, and you know, because again, I was in my teens. But as I got older, you know, I have, most everybody knows I have peripheral neuropathy, which is a circulation problem, and then I'm also a diabetic. And, you know, of course, back then, I didn't know that this was going to happen to me.
Right.
But I'm grateful that, you know, that the money's there and it's coming to me. And, you know, and that should go for anyone, that if you push your dime in, you should be able to get that back.
Well,
I don't think that people that are on SSI, I don't think that they should be getting anything, because if they haven't paid in, why should they get anything back?
Well, I think it's interesting that you say, you know, if the money's there, because the money really isn't there. That's the whole issue.
And but 17 years ago, Al Gore said that it's in a lockbox.
Lockbox. Yeah, I know Al Gore said that.
Sounded like Forrest Gump when he said it.
Mama said
lockboxes are like boxes of chocolate.
Right. So I'm not criticizing you taking money, because you've paid in for it for a long time. And as I said before, people that have paid in and they're getting something back out, more power to you from my point of view. But I think it's deceiving to say that, well, if the money's there, the money's not there. And that's why we should have, you know, that hard talk about Social Security at the federal level and at the state level. And at some point, somebody's going to have to acknowledge that there are hundreds of billions of unfunded liabilities under these programs that you could never pay for.
Right.
It's just impossible. Us as a country can never, ever, ever pay for. That's the hard truth.
I mean, I'm one of those people, I don't have a problem with anybody collecting, you know, to make ends meet, that's putting effort in to some degree. Obviously, you're limited, you know, given your situation, but you did at one point or another put time in. And I know people that are collecting SSDI that are fully capable of working, and they're just, you know, they're just choosing not to out of pure laziness. Well, and
they think that that's an entitlement program, okay? And it, in some respects, it is an entitlement program for people that pay into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an entitlement program, as far as I'm concerned, okay, that if you decide that, you know, that you want to, you know, wreck your life or be a junkie or whatever and not put anything, you shouldn't get anything.
Well, here's the issue, is that no politician will ever get up on the stump running for re-election, running for election, and say, if elected, I will shut down Social Security, because that means that they will lose every senior vote and the seniors still get out and vote.
Right. And so, they're also not going to say that, you know, we're going to cut back on Medicare or Medicaid. In as a matter of fact, they'll, you know, we'll wind up, you know, looking at ways to expand the Medicare. No,
they've
and
actually
the
they've done stuff like that recently, where they like raised deductibles and stuff like that. Where like we as in, because I used to sell Medicare supplements, and we ended up having to raise our premiums to, because we end up covering more of the costs that Medicare's, you know, not covering anymore.
They'll do that, but nobody will ever actually stand up and campaign on it.
But then the insurance companies look like the bad guys because we're raising our prices. But
Right. But it is just it's a sad situation, and that's what happens when you embrace a socialist program.
Right.
At some point, you run out of other people's money to spend.
And going back to whether or not any of this is entitlements, I'll just say no one is entitled to anyone else's money. Robert, thank you for the call. Let's go to Sarah calling in from New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Yes, my subject is a little bit off, but, you know, Mr. Trump, he's going to give us the $50 million federal dollars to complete the rapid transit.
You're building a rapid transit?
That is so kind of him.
Okay, Obama approved $69 million when he was like 3 years ago, and President Trump said, well, I'm not going to give it. It's too bad you got everything digged up, all the everything tore up. It's too bad, but now he's going to give $50 million to us.
Oh, does that make you a Trump supporter now?
The us here, Sarah, you're talking about the city of Albuquerque where you live?
Yeah, the ART, the rapid transit. You know, the thing was half built already almost.
Right.
And so, then Trump said, I'm not going to give you the money because I have to dump. I have to give $50 billion to war. And then he gave another more money to war again. And then he gave $80 million, $480 billion for the airplanes. But he says, I'm not going to give you guys the money to build a rapid transit. But now he's going to give it, and he's going to give $16 billion later on.
Right.
So, well, you know, we're out here like, you can't do this to us, because the whole thing is like tore up and all the dirt is tossed around. And
This may be one of these rare times when I actually say this. I would rather see, if tax dollars have to go somewhere, Sarah, I would rather see them go into your mass transit than to war.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean.
I'd rather see them not go anywhere except back to the people who paid them, but if that's not an option.
Well, you guys talk about, why don't you raise your own money? Well, all the taxes that we pay go towards making bombs and killing people. What is $50 billion? And then also, he gave another.
Wait, is that how much it? That's how much the transit would need is $50 million.
I think she said it needs 69 million.
We're supposed to get 69 million from the
federal
government.
Isn't that? Oh, that's. I'm pretty sure that's exactly how much those Tomahawk missiles that were dropped in Syria on that military base. The total came to about $69 million.
Oh, there
you go.
Would
you look at that?
Yeah. Just hold on, Sarah. Just for. You know, to reiterate something, because a lot of times I'm not sure you necessarily hear everything that we say. We don't support spending money on dropping bombs around the world. Just because we don't support, you know, spending money on building your fancy little rapid transit thing doesn't mean that we support something that you don't like. We don't support spending money on either of those
things. I support everybody that benefits from that transit funding it themselves.
Here.
But that's why they collect taxes. That's why we pay taxes. That's why we file a tax return.
No, you pay taxes because you would wind up going to prison if you didn't, and they wound up sending you to court.
But I do think even if you made taxes voluntary and people could opt out, there would be a lot of people that still pay, though.
At a local level, I think you would.
It'd be more like dues.
But I'm telling you, if I had the option of paying federal income tax, knowing that some of it was going to go help pay for Sarah's very fast choo-choo train, then I would say I'm not interested, because that has nothing to do with me. But if the people in Albuquerque wish to go fast in a train, that's cool. Let them do it.
Have GoFundMes for the art project thing. Have a GoFundMe for all of the things. Sarah, thank you for the call. This is Free Talk Live. Your calls and thoughts, welcome, and we'll get back into the Puerto Rico story. And what about the soda taxes? Yeah, they're expanding those to not just things with sugar in them. Your calls and thoughts, welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Chris.
Oops, forgot to unmute those.
And Heather.
And Chris again, still.
Before we get back into the Puerto Rico story, I want to make sure that I tell you about Bitcoin.com. They recently reported that Bitcoin transaction fees have increased by more than 1,200% since 2015. And to many Bitcoin proponents, the current fee market is moving way too fast, making Bitcoin unusable for certain transactions. I actually had to send a $2 transaction to someone earlier today, and it cost me 64 cents. That is absolutely ridiculous. The fee market and slow confirmation times have also increased the tension concerning the block size debate. However, if there are wallets with low amounts of Bitcoin that can't cover the fees, they become virtually unspendable. Learn more at news.bitcoin.com. That's news.bitcoin.com. Back to the story that we began the show with out of Puerto Rico, where finally last year the U.S. Congress allowed the Puerto Rican territorial government to file something akin to bankruptcy. It's not under Chapter 9. It's a special bankruptcy provision. And Heather started telling us about that, and then we got off onto the topic of Social Security. So let's get back into the story about Puerto Rico. And while she's pulling that article back up, again, let me just sort of reiterate how far in debt Puerto Rico is. They're about $70 billion in debt. And Reuters says that bankruptcy, the $70 billion bankruptcy in Puerto Rico, is going to dwarf the bankruptcy filed by the city of Detroit back in 2013. And they're also saying that it could wind up affecting about $3.8 trillion in municipal bonds. And the reason it affects municipal bonds is because for many, many years, governments and some investors around the country were investing in Puerto Rican bonds because there was a tax-free loophole that wound up, some of the loopholes wound up getting closed recently, which caused the Puerto Rican government to wind up getting in this debt mess that they're in.
Okay, so back to our article here where we left off stating that there was the $74 billion in debts and $49 billion in pension liabilities. It goes on to say that the bankruptcy filing, casts a shadow of uncertainty over the future of Puerto Rico pensioners, American retirees who own the island's debt, institutional investors who back the island in good times, like Daryl was saying, and businesses with lucrative contracts. But it could also provide hope to residents seeking to preserve access to basic services such as public safety and health care, while also offering a potential route to economic stability for an island that has been suffering for years. Puerto Rico officials have complained that their debt crisis has cut off funds needed to pay doctors and run schools.
So here's my question about any form of municipal bankruptcy. And I realize that, you know, there are various levels of bankruptcy and various types of bankruptcy. But a lot of times when a business files bankruptcy, the business ceases to exist.
Unless you're Donald Trump.
Well, he just created new businesses.
Right.
But there is, you know, I forget if it's chapter 11 or 13 or 7, but one of them is that sort of, you know, we're restructuring and reorganizing sort of debt. But then there's the, we're completely insolvent, this business is ceasing to exist, we're filing bankruptcy. Why is it when governments file bankruptcy, they don't cease to exist?
That's a good question. Because what I'd imagine is them filing bankruptcy is just saying, hey, we don't have the money to pay this bill, so it's going to come out of the pocket of, you know, people over in New Hampshire, people over in California. So you're going to foot the bill for Puerto Rico's bad investments.
Right. And we footed the bill when Orange County, California filed bankruptcy. We footed the bill when Detroit filed bankruptcy. We footed the bill when Jefferson County, Alabama filed bankruptcy.
Sure.
None of these governments that have filed bankruptcy
have ceased to exist. And none of the people running them have ceased to be running the governments. I mean, it's like, you think if you're filing bankruptcy and you're the person in charge, why is your job not the first thing we get rid of?
Sometimes.
At least in Jefferson County, Alabama, pretty much everybody that was in the county commission during the time period where they racked up all of this debt is, you know, some bond swap, tricky sewer debacle. All but one person is in prison right now. And I'm still trying to figure out, and I'm somewhat intimately familiar with this because I grew up there. I'm still trying to figure out how Betty Fine Collins is not in prison. Everybody else that was on the county commission during this entire time when they were racking up this billion-plus dollars in debt on, again, expanding the sewer, everybody else is in prison. Everybody else, except for this one person. And she was not a co-defendant in any of the cases. There's no records of her, you know, singing like a little birdie, like a bunch of the co-defendants for Larry Langford, who was the former county commission president turned mayor of Birmingham, Alabama, who, when he was being sentenced, they could not figure out how old he was because he had different records saying different things. So his Social Security record said one thing. His birth certificate said something else. His Army record said something else. And they're like, well, we know you're up there in age anyway, so we'll just wind up going lenient on you. And, you know, they gave him a somewhat lengthy sentence, but it was not as lengthy as it could have been if he were, say, 20 years younger. But yet the sewer system still exists and the county still exists. And what they wound up doing was allowing the county to send everyone that lives in the county a sewer bill, even if they're not hooked up to the sewer.
Now, what happens, right, if they file for bankruptcy?
That's what they did. They filed for bankruptcy.
But then they go before the judge, right? The judge grants them the bankruptcy. What if they don't get the bankruptcy? They end up like Venezuela or something?
No, then they just default on the debt and wind up their credit rating gets dinged a little bit.
Right, but they'll still continue to tax. They'll still continue to operate.
So they don't have to be given this bankruptcy, right? They're hoping.
I don't know what all of the rules are on municipal bankruptcy, so I don't know if, you know, if you request it, if the judge has to grant it. So that's a question that I can't answer. Let's get back into the article here.
So the article goes on to say that I guess Puerto Rico has lost 20% of its jobs since 2007 and 10% of its population, sparking an economic crisis that worsens by the day.
Yeah, whenever you wind up losing that percentage of your population and that many jobs, yeah, things are going to wind up, you know, hurting. And they're going to do what they did here of, oh, well, we still need to spend all of this money, so we're just going to borrow and borrow and borrow. And, oh, we've borrowed way too much, but we still need to borrow more because government. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3.
North to Port is a Liberty-inspired fiction podcast about a band on tour. Each episode chronicles the band's adventures in the form of a radio interview at a tour stop location. Listen as North to Port explores Liberty themes in friendly ways, with humor and music. To listen to the podcast and the accompanying album, please visit northtoport.com. That's NORTHTOPORT.com. Or just search North to Port in your favorite podcatcher.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We're discussing the Puerto Rican bankruptcy and that entire financial crisis that was created because of governments. Well, of course, any municipal, you know, bankruptcy is going to have been...
By definition,
because of some government somewhere. But a lot of the problems in Puerto Rico were caused by the U.S. federal government, where they first gave a lot of exemptions, and then they decided, you know what, we're taking these exemptions away to where things that had previously been tax-free aren't tax-free now, and businesses decided, you know what, we're leaving Puerto Rico. And then because the jobs left, a lot of people left. And, well, the territorial government didn't just wind up cutting spending. They just borrowed money.
And, of course, this is government trying to fix problems that government created in the first place. So we're from the government. We're here to help is the worst thing
right.
you can ever possibly hear.
Yes. So we'll get back into that. But first, to the phones, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Mark calling in from Utah. Mark, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Hey, guys. Today I wanted to talk about a story that I just barely broke. It was I found it on ZeroHedge.com, and it talks about how the Office of the Director of National Intelligence has released some data showing that President Obama sought the NSA intelligence on thousands of Americans, that basically it was a request of 30,000 requests for American information on metadata intercepts.
Oh, that's good. So he was just keeping up on us, making sure we were okay.
Well, that's not even the worst part. The bigger news is the report that came out of that office yesterday that said that the NSA gathered at least 151 million phone records of U.S. citizens in 2016 after U.S. Congress passed the USA Freedom Act that supposedly prevented the NSA from collecting phone records.
Lo and behold, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I don't mean to laugh, but I'm just kind of at that point in my life where nothing that our government does really surprises me.
Right, you know, but it's just, you know, they passed a law saying they can't do this anymore. How did they wind up collecting 151 million phone records of U.S. citizens?
Accidentally,
after
Darryl,
being told that they couldn't do that anymore.
Slipped, hit the wrong key. These things happen, Darryl.
You know, it's like when you tell a five-year-old, don't do that anymore, and they go ahead and do it anyway. But I told you, you can't do this. Well, I did it.
Yeah.
Do you really think it's like Obama, though? I mean, how much... I think about this all the time. Like, how much pull does the president really have? Because the president changes every couple of years, but everybody around the president doesn't. You know what I mean? So it's almost like if you were to
A lot of the people around the president do change.
Well, close to, yeah. But you're right, Heather. There is that whole other administration, career bureaucrats that never leave Washington. They're here decade after decade.
Oh,
and
that's
I agree.
The institutional knowledge that we can't get rid of.
I'll call
Chris.
It the shadow government.
I got to imagine that every room in the White House is like bugged, and like when you get elected president, like your phone's already tapped. Like you're just like a puppet. Like, what can you really do? You know what I mean? Like, if you end up like John F. Kennedy, where you actually want to make a difference, look what happens.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, is it possible to even get elected at this point? Because you have people that are in power that are ruthless. They kill people. They bomb people. It's like, how do you, you know, use peace and persuasion and, like, you know, peacefully get elected into office and then expect these people to just be like, okay, well, you win. I'm going to put my hands up. Here you go. Have your freedom back.
Nah, I think a lot of the people that are actually in power in D.C. are people most people have never heard of, never will hear of, and probably
behind
a lot
scenes.
Of people that come in with new administrations.
Now, you're not talking
never,
about, you know, like the 13 bloodlines of the Illuminati sort of thing.
No,
right?
Shadow
no
government.
I'm talking about, you know, the assistant deputy secretary of the interior. You know, he's just a bureaucrat, and I'm using that facetiously. Please don't call me Mr. Assistant deputy secretary.
Well, he is just a bureaucrat.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, but
you're
is.
Talking about the people that aren't appointed by each administration.
Right. And they're and even if they are, maybe they were, but their position is just so low down the totem pole, or at least, you know, a step or two away from cabinet level, that they just sort of, you know, don't get noticed. And that's Bob. He's been here forever. Well, maybe Bob has an agenda. You know what I mean?
Right.
And maybe
now,
he's...
how interesting, and Mark, I want your thoughts on this. How interesting would things be if every government employee wound up having to reapply for their job every time a new president was sworn in? So, you know, I'm talking about everybody. The guy that, you know, cleans the bathrooms at Yellowstone Park on third shift. What if he had to reapply for his job every time a new president was sworn
then
in?
Then they're going to raise taxes to pay for all the new paper applications.
It would be that.
Yeah. I think that would be a great idea, except for, you know, I don't believe that people should be, like, reapplying for jobs. It's like they should just be all fired.
So. You're probably not going to get a lot of disagreement here.
Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate here and say, if everybody gets fired, then who cleans the bathroom at Yellowstone Park?
Or who builds
on
the roads?
Third shift?
Volunteers.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there are solutions in all these areas. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm walking over here. Yeah, Go ahead.
Sorry, if Yellowstone Park and the bathrooms that are associated with that park are really important to the people that visit the park, they will make sure that everything is taken care of.
Agreed.
Certainly. And I'm glad you mentioned volunteers, because I actually know some people that do these sort of, you know, work barter things, to where they'll live in an RV park for a period of time. Sure. And instead of paying whatever the rent is, they do work around the RV park. So you might work the front desk checking in visitors to the park. You might scrub the toilets one day. So, yeah, I think the same thing would apply at national parks, assuming that the national parks still existed as national parks. I would love to see, you know, sell off Yellowstone to the Audubon Society,
right,
or some other group that is interested in preserving nature. You know, groups that are actually interested in preserving nature, not the federal government, which is the world's largest polluter.
Yeah, and I'm totally in agreement. I think that national parks should be privatized. But not, you know, I live here in Utah, and we have Zion's National Park, which is considered to be the best national park in the country. And, you know, like, it's beautiful, beautiful country. And I tell people that what a shame it is that you have to go so far into the park, you know, and that there's nothing around, like no shops, no businesses, no, like, gas station. You know, right. You basically have to just go out into the wilderness forever. And then live out in the wilderness, and it's like, and so it takes you forever to even get there.
Yeah. Yep. And we've got a long history of, you know, in the name. And here's what's disturbing to me is government can spend anything they want. You know, we've got to protect the environment. Therefore, we're going to seize, you know, 500,000 acres of, you know, for example, land that is filled with rich minerals and oil or natural gas or things like that.
You know, I do,
and they'll
think,
get away with it every time.
I do think, though, at certain points, there are well-intentioned government agencies that might be, at that point in time, exactly what they did. But then, you know, change of powers.
Right.
Someone else gets in there and says, well, hey, that beautiful park is sitting on top of all of these resources. Let's dig it up. And because you've already given the power to the government, it's theirs for the taking, pretty much.
Well, they just took the power. I don't think there was a vote of, do we want to give the federal government the ability to create parks? No, the government just said, we're going to create some parks now. And, hey, this land over here, it's
I
a
like
park.
It. I like you that
You don't
land.
Get to use it without our permission. Mark, thank you for the call. Your calls and thoughts, welcome, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Your thoughts on government-run parks, municipal bankruptcy, whatever is on your mind, this is Free Talk Live. Yeah! This is Free Talk Live. Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And have you ever wanted to start your own website or blog, but haven't been able to put that idea into action? Well, you're in luck, because HostGator, one of the top hosting companies out there, is offering a special deal to Free Talk Live listeners. Go to HostGator.com/FTL, and you can get up to 50% off their regular prices. Hosting your own website or blog can be intimidating, but HostGator makes it easy. HostGator offers a simple one-click, easy installation for WordPress. They've got 24/7 over-the-phone or live chat tech support and a very intuitive and user-friendly control panel that puts the power of creation and the simplicity of use into the hands of you, the customer. HostGator has a 99.99% uptime rating, so you don't have to worry about outages. To get that special offer of up to 50% off for Free Talk Live listeners, visit HostGator.com/FTL. We're discussing the Puerto Rican economic crisis that seems to wind up getting some kind of relief, might be a bailout. We're not entirely sure how it's going to play out, but we do know that the Puerto Rican government did file for some form of a municipal bankruptcy. Was that today, Heather, that they made this filing?
I believe so. All of the articles, or maybe yesterday.
So let's get back into that article.
Okay, so basically, it says the island's response has worsened matters. Politicians raised taxes, allowed governmental bureaucracy to balloon, borrowed to pay the bills, and promised pensions that the island could not afford.
Hold on. So governments
I knew you were
created a problem, and then their solution to the problem is to make things worse.
More government.
That's pretty much what it does.
Well, the result is that Puerto Rico can no longer fully pay its debt and pay for government services, as the oversight board said in the court filing, nor can Puerto Rico refinance its debts. It no longer has access to the capital markets. In short, Puerto Rico's crisis has reached a breaking point, end quote. The island's slumping economy was perhaps the final straw. Some 6 in 10 Puerto Ricans are unemployed or not interested in working, and nearly half are enrolled in Medicaid.
Okay, so I'm going to sort of pick apart this statistic just a little bit, to where they said 6 in 10 are unemployed or otherwise not interested in working. If you look at the workforce, and I'm using the term, you know, in air quotes there, on the mainland of the United States, plus Alaska and Hawaii. So, you know, when people think United States of America, the 50 states plus the District of Criminals, then about 40% of the people that are of working age, read over the age of 18, are some level of not working. Now, a lot of those are people that are retired. A lot of those are people that are students. A lot of those are people that are on some form of disability, and then you have the people that are unemployed.
Right.
So when they say here 6 in 10 are unemployed or otherwise not interested in working, that seems to be, you know, slightly inflating. Now the question is, how many of those people that aren't working want to work?
Right.
Meaning that they're not on some form of disability, they're not collecting some pension, they're not retired.
Right.
If there's no incentive, they're probably not going to work, so.
Yeah, in some cases, yeah. I hate to throw blanket statements out there, but in some cases, that's certainly what happens.
According to the article, apparently some of them are leaving. It says, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens and can move to the mainland at any time, draining the island's tax base. Tens of thousands have streamed into Florida.
Right, and earlier in the article it says that since 2007, 10% of the people that were living in Puerto Rico have left Puerto Rico.
Yep. The legal case is not technically considered a bankruptcy filing under the federal code that governs municipal cases, but it's similar. Instead, it was filed through a bankruptcy-like mechanism dubbed Title III of legislation authorized by Congress and signed into law by President Obama in 2016.
Right, and that was the thing they called PROMESA, the Puerto Rico Oversight, Management, and Economic Stability Act.
Stability.
That allows them to do something like bankruptcy that's technically not a bankruptcy. And even when a municipal government like Detroit files Chapter 9 bankruptcy, it's still not like, you know, regular business bankruptcy, right, where they just cease to exist.
Hmm. So if you're wondering what happens next, it says U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts will appoint a life tenure judge, likely a U.S. District Court judge, to oversee the case, said Melissa Jacoby, a University of North Carolina law professor. That's different than Chapter 9 municipal bankruptcy cases, where a bankruptcy judge controls the process. The person appointed to oversee the case will have significant power over how it unfolds. And this particular debt-cutting process has never occurred, so the lack of legal precedent could leave the judge with much sway over the future of Puerto Rico.
Don't you just love that, where they're like, all right, this has never happened before, so we don't really know how it's going to happen, so right. Mr. Judge Guy, have fun here.
Like, you're going to have a whole country. Oh, I would hate to be in his shoes.
We've given you some guidelines, presumably laid out in this Title III thing. Yeah, I'm guessing there's some guidelines there.
That's probably one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't situations.
So, you know, like, here's some guidelines. Have fun.
Well, what does the Oversight Board do? The article explains. The Oversight Board will aim to negotiate debt cuts with creditors, after which it will propose a plan of adjustment. The judge will decide whether to authorize the plan, which could lead to massive debt cuts.
So that's, I think, part of the answer to a question you asked earlier of, does the judge have to approve this? And it sounds like, you know, a judge is going to be named to oversee this, and then he'll get to decide what and the how and the when and all of the intimate details. There's more to this. I will post the link on the Facebook and the Twitter. And let's go to Skype, where we've got Craig calling in. Craig, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing well. You're on the air. What's
good
up?
I wanted to, I don't know if you guys have talked about this, but I was calling in about this incident with Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, I love Jimmy Kimmel, though.
What's the incident with Jimmy Kimmel?
Well, the incident is, I guess the other night, well, he was talking about, I guess his, he had a baby with birth defects, and he was talking about that, and what he did was, is he went, he changed the subject, well, not completely, but he went to the, to a political discussion about Obamacare, and also he was mainly talking about
pre-existing conditions.
Yeah, pre-existing conditions, and you know how this we have to have this if we don't have a Republican congressman by the name of Joe Walsh made some kind of a tweet coming out against it. And, you know, he's the progressive movement, the progressive, all the progressives that I know, everybody, I mean, it's just all over Facebook. They just went ballistic,
right,
and they're calling him a baby killer and all, you know, this kind of stuff. So I'm just wondering if you'd heard about this.
Hold on. So they're calling Jimmy Kimmel a baby killer, or
no,
the congressman?
The congressman.
No. Anybody that believes that there shouldn't be pre-existing conditions
coverage.
Coverage. Yes.
Right.
Coverage. They're talking about coverage for with Obamacare or whatever kind
so
of.
So they're saying that people should be forced to sell a product.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course.
So let me offer my heartless. 2 cents in here first. I don't know what Jimmy Kimmel's latest contract was. Anybody know off the top of their head how many millions of dollars he gets
nope.
to do
no.
what he... I think it's
he wasn't talking about his own situation. He was talking about the situation. He was coming out as an advocate for poor people.
Right. I get all that, but here's what I get tired of.
So wait, it was Jimmy Kimmel in favor?
No, Jimmy Kimmel used a tragedy as a way of pushing his political agenda, which was support of Obamacare and support of a requirement by government to not only provide health insurance to all citizens, but also to cover any pre-existing condition that occurs. I'd love to talk more about this.
Yeah. Craig, hold the line. And, you know, it sounds like Jimmy Kimmel was basically acting like a politician. He used a tragedy to, you know, get on a bully pulpit of sorts. Your calls and thoughts welcome. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733.
Bitcoin.com is the most unique online destination in the Bitcoin universe. Buying Bitcoin? Do it here! Want to speak your mind to other Bitcoin users? Our forum is always open and censorship-free at forum.bitcoin.com. There's no bigger Bitcoin believers than the Bitcoin.com team. That's why this site is a one-stop shop for everything you need to get into Bitcoin life. You can also play games at games.bitcoin.com. Learn more at bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com.
This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Kicking off hour number three in studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And we've been talking for most of the show about the municipal bankruptcy that's not exactly a municipal bankruptcy in Puerto Rico. And Chris, you've actually got a story that I forget what it was. I know. I'm just teasing what's coming up. You've got a story about how the L.A. riots 25 years ago wound up changing the face of police work in L.A.
That's what the article talks about.
That hopefully we will get into, but back to the phones, actually to Skype, where we've got Craig. And Craig, thank you for holding over through the news. You called in, mentioned Jimmy Kimmel had sort of gone on a rant about Obamacare and pre-existing conditions. And Chris, I know you wanted to respond about the pre-existing conditions. So, Craig, thank you for holding on.
Now, I to recap a little bit, it seems like a lot of people were very touched by Jimmy Kimmel's monologue where he talked about, you know, why pre-existing conditions have to be covered because, for example, my son was born with a congenital heart issue.
Right.
And first of all, my heart goes out to any parent who has to deal with something like that occurring to a newborn or, you know, anything that involves your children. I'm a parent. That strikes really close to my heart, no pun intended. But to then use that as an example of why you want to push an agenda that you've been pushing rubs me the wrong way. And Jimmy Kimmel's been very much you know, he was very pro-Obama, he was very pro-Hillary, and very pro-Obamacare. So I just, it rubs me the wrong way.
My understanding, and Chris, definitely correct me if I'm wrong here, but my understanding is if a child is born with an illness or a disease of some sort, that is covered when they're born. So, for instance, when my son was born, he was born with pneumonia and an E. coli infection.
Wow.
And that was covered. The insurance covered because he was born with that.
Sort of the act of being born. It's related to the birth. And I don't know how that works. And I couldn't tell you, Daryl, whether that's the case or not. I can say that Jimmy Kimmel could certainly afford the best care in the world available for his son.
Right. And then you have the things of where somebody doesn't have health insurance, they go out rock climbing, they fall down the mountain and they break their leg, and then they call on the way to the hospital, they call up an insurance company, yeah, I'm going to need insurance. Do you have any pre-existing condition? Yeah, I just broke my leg. Oh, right. Okay. It well, we've got to cover that.
Right. And the other issue is this is one subject where, you know, people will say charity cannot cover health insurance. But you look at organizations like the Shriners Hospital,
St. Jude's
Hospital. These people are reaching out to families and whenever they can. And I would imagine, you know, if it were a destitute family who went through this at birth and the financial impact would have been immense and dramatic. I'm sure that the hospital itself probably would have said, we have these programs here locally.
Right.
Or, you know, this foundation looks for things like that. Or they would say, you might want to contact the Shriners. You might want to contact St. Jude's.
Right. And my understanding
things like that,
is,
we'll take care of all that for you.
My understanding is that St. Jude, if, you know, you have a child that goes to St. Jude for treatment, St. Jude never sends the family a bill at all because it is all covered through
right.
donations and charity. Craig, do you have any more thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of that is a lot of this would not be an issue if it wasn't for what government has done to the cost of our health care.
Absolutely.
Certainly.
I mean, that is something that they never bring up. They always emphasize the coverage, but they never even mention anything about what has happened to the cost of healthcare.
That is such an important distinction, and I rail on this all the time. And it's that we talk about healthcare as a subject, but the conversation is about insurance.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? We talk about healthcare like it's not like the cost of how much it takes to get an X-ray. We talk about, well, the premiums. It's right. like this is a government-mandated middleman in between doctor and patient. And we've had this going on at some level, you know, definitely since the Nixon years, to right. some degree before that. But once we started to mandate that employers of a certain size had to provide health insurance, then it's like, okay, well, employers of all sizes have to provide health insurance, have to offer it. And then it becomes, mm-hmm. well, you know, if they don't have it, then you are going to be covered by a government okayed health insurance program.
Right.
And forget all that.
So, you know, the governments definitely regulate that middleman, the insurance companies, but they also regulate the healthcare providers.
That's
to
what
where,
I was just going to say. The,
you know, in
the
a
doctors.
Lot of in a lot of areas. So not only do they, you know, limit the number of doctors that are allowed to practice in
right.
certain
country,
areas
in the entire if, country, there's only so many licenses they'll give out.
Right.
If somebody wants to open a hospital in, you know, the middle of nowhere Kentucky that is not currently being served by a hospital, then all of the hospitals in what they consider to be the area get to decide whether or not this new proposed hospital gets what they call a certificate of need of, do we really need a hospital in this town of 1,000 people? We've got four hospitals that are 2-hour drives away in any direction. Do we really need a hospital here? And so it's, you know, the other hospitals and the doctors voting on whether or not, you know, to have competition.
Right. And when you insert that middleman, and this is a really important takeaway for those of you who may not understand it, what you're doing is saying that this person is going to provide a guaranteed rate of pay, of compensation to the provider for a given condition. And by any other name, that's just price fixing.
Right.
And now it's going to cause the provider to charge up to and slightly exceed the amount that he's going to get covered because he want to make sure he gets all that he possibly can. So we've completely skewed the price structure. You've removed price sensitivity from the act of getting health care. And when you do that, then people behave irresponsibly. Providers behave irresponsibly, and patients do.
I can give an example of that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I know that there was some talk in Massachusetts when I lived there, you know, because everybody has health insurance with the MassHealth, that people on it, instead of going to when their kids would get sick, instead of taking them to the primary care doctor, which is actually cheaper, a lot of families, because the insurance paid for it, would just abuse the privileges and walk right into the emergency room,
right.
which costs like, you know, 10 times as much. And they'd bring them in there with like a little cough that could have waited till the next morning,
right.
or something like that. And it's like, you don't want to tell your people not to bring them to the ER. But at the same time, it's like people, they don't think because they have no concept of money. They get it for free, the insurance. So well, they're just...
In addition to that, there's the thing of if you call the school and say, hey, little Johnny's not coming to school today. He's sick. Oh, well, when he comes in tomorrow, we better have a note from the doctor. But if you call the doctor, hey, little Johnny's sick. Well, we can see him in 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, right. Massachusetts is bad like that. And if you don't give like notes and stuff and your kid misses so many days, they'll send like DCF out to like come, you know, talk to you, make sure you're not neglecting your kid by not sending him to the public institution.
Let's give another example, because Chris, you touched on, you know, part of this to where, and Heather, you did as well, to where the patients will wind up, you know, sort of abusing the insurance. If car insurance covered stuff the same way that health insurance did, people would go in for oil changes every Friday because, well, I'm not paying for it.
Right. And then complain.
Exactly.
And then complain because their premiums have gone up 5,000%. And then we would have a crisis in driving.
This is a great analogy,
a crisis in auto insurance because.
Wait until you get into a car crash and then call up State Farm. It's a pre-existing condition. You've got to cover me.
If you buy a fixer-upper.
Craig, thank you for the call. Your calls and thoughts, 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Have you ever noticed how you feel sluggish and tired after a big meal? That's because your body's enzymes are prioritizing the digestion of food. This is why many people take a digestive enzyme supplement. A quality enzyme supplement that contains a full array of enzymes will help digest all three macronutrients, protein, fat, and carbohydrates. This means more energy for you and improved weight management over time. Some nutritional experts even feel a digestive enzyme supplement is more important than a vitamin or mineral supplement. But with Whole Food Multicomplete, you don't have to decide between the two. You can get both because Whole Food Multicomplete includes both vitamins and minerals and digestive enzymes in a single product. And not only that, they include 5 other classes of nutrients for a total of 54 nutrients. For 15 years, Whole Food Multicomplete has combined digestive enzymes, vitamins and minerals, probiotics, antioxidants, herbal immune support, and more into a single product. And they're the only one that does a 7-in-1 product, so they're making thousands of people healthier while saving thousands of dollars. Get 30% off with coupon code FTL from your first order. That's basically the cost of the item. And you get free shipping on orders over $60. SimplifyMySupplements.com, coupon code FTL. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Joe calling in from Birmingham. Joe, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Yes, the one thing I've always wondered is when you have insurance and you get a bill from the hospital, it says we worked out an agreement and we accept this much less. And when I had my operation, they took like a third. They only paid, Blue Cross only paid a third of what the actual bill was. Why do they not work like that with people that do not have insurance? It seems like it's backwards.
Well, they will. And I'm trying to pull up a website that I highly recommend. It's called True Cost of Healthcare, and I'll get the actual URL. But this was done by a doctor a few years back. And this guy's a physician. He's a family practitioner in California.
Mm-hmm.
More liberal, you know. He's not a libertarian. He's definitely not a conservative. But somebody asked him one time, he was in conversation. He's like, wow, you're a doctor. How much money do you make? And it struck him that he had no idea how much money he made.
I believe you're talking about Dr. David Belk.
There we
MD,
go.
MD, truecostofhealthcare.net.
Thank you. So what he did was he tasked his office staff with making some phone calls and taking on different parts of healthcare and trying to find out exactly what healthcare cost. He figured if he could figure out how much it cost, then he could figure out how much he actually made. And he talked about that very subject, you know, like a hospital stay that, you know, the the hospital will tell the insurance company it costs, you know, $23,000 a night or whatever it happens to be. And then he found out that they would negotiate that down to, you know, less than $2,000 in some instances,
right,
for people that didn't have insurance. So it's probably a little dated by now. It's a couple years old, but he does talk a lot about, you know, sometimes prescription drugs was a great example he used, was don't buy your insurance company's prescription drug plan. Don't pay extra for that. Instead, when you have a prescription, get your doctor to write the prescription for something that's in the same family,
right,
and is available in a generic, and then go to Costco and buy a 90-day supply for less than you would have paid, you know, with your copay.
Or even if you go to Target or CVS, a lot of times these pharmacies will have some sort of plan to where we'll give you generics for, you know, like I've seen some as low as $4 for the prescription.
Oh, yeah. And Walmart made big waves when they came out with that, you know, their $4 prescription list. But that's the thing. People, hospitals and healthcare providers will do that. They absolutely will, but
you have to ask.
You have to ask.
There are times they might say, fill out this stack of forms.
Sure.
And
Or they may threaten you, you know, and that's what it is, because they want people with insurance, because insurance is going to just pay. If something is, if on the sheet it says this is how much it pays, then they're going to get it every single time.
And then there's also the thing to where the insurance company will dispute with a doctor whether or not a certain procedure was actually needed. And so then you wind up having doctors that do basically what I call the spaghetti poo theory of doctoring, which is very similar to the spaghetti poo theory of lawyering, to where you just, you know, throw as much stuff at the insurance company and see what sticks. So you know that you only need two procedures. Well, we're going to do five because I'm not sure which ones they're actually going to cover.
Right.
And I know they're going to reject something, but, you know, let's just throw several at the insurance company and see what they wind up paying.
Yeah. But to the caller, I would highly recommend you go to truecostofhealthcare.net and check out his videos. It's good stuff. Go ahead.
The next question, in that respect, do they take and use that as a loss when they take less money? Is that a bookkeeping gimmick?
Probably.
I don't know. That's something that you would need to wind up asking a doctor on, but they might wind up doing that. I know that, you know, a lot of companies, and Chris, you run a small business, you probably wind up somehow incorporating into your budgeting the fact that some of your product is going to either go bad or go missing.
Yeah, we have to.
So it would not surprise me if doctors somehow calculate, you know, these losses into their projected budgets.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it also might make it, you know, if they're smaller time doctors, it might be more beneficial because it could put them in a lower tax bracket.
Yeah, well, there's that. Plus, there are all the 88,000 pages of IRS rules where you can find a loophole for whatever you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So,
right. Yeah,
by claiming business losses and so on and so on. But what it's interesting is in this entire conversation about healthcare, we haven't really talked about healthcare. We keep talking about insurance.
Correct.
We talk about money flowing back and forth. We don't really talk about, well, did the patient get better? Was he able to get, you know, healthcare at a reasonable price? But we can't anymore because of government.
Right. Yeah. And it's one of those things where, you know, what's the statement about he who controls the debate controls, or something along those lines?
It's close enough for me.
Joe, okay. Any final thoughts?
That's it. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Thank you very much.
And what were you going to say, Heather?
I was just kind of curious when the last time you guys have been to a doctor was.
Me?
Yeah.
About a year ago when I came back from New York City and was severely dehydrated and was in the LRN bathroom for about 14 hours.
Last time for me, I went to a doc in the box because I had taken a nasty ice fall. Black ice matters here in New Hampshire.
So how long ago was that?
A little over about a year, year and a half, 2 years, something like that.
And what about you, Miss Heather?
Oh, God, mine was like a year and a half ago, and it was just me like Googling my symptoms and freaking out and going, and it was nothing.
Yep, WebMD. WebMD will either make you think nothing is wrong or you've got 700 different types of cancer.
Other than that, I haven't been sick, really, other than like the occasional cold for a really long time.
Your calls and thoughts. Welcome. 855-450-FREE. Plus, how did policing in L.A. change 25 years ago?
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, it's Daryl.
And Heather.
And Chris.
And Chris, let's get into this story about the Los Angeles Police Department and how everything changed 25 years ago. And now for the young people in the audience and in the studio.
Gee, thanks.
What happened 25 years ago in Los Angeles?
We had the LA riots.
And, you know,
what were they rioting over?
Yes.
Because really, I was only like two when that happened.
Yeah. So it started off with the Rodney King.
Yep. Rodney King was the guy had gotten pulled over by police for something, and well, he just didn't stay down, so the cops had to keep hitting him with their batons and yelling, quit resisting.
Yep, and what was kind of a big deal at the time, in 1992, not everybody was running around with, you know, phones on their, or mm-hmm. cameras on their phone.
Yeah.
But
because
this particular
people didn't have cell phone. If you had a telephone, it was a landline. If you had a camera, it was, you know, like one of these big, giant, bulky things.
But
it cost a couple thousand dollars.
However it worked out, there was a stop of a gentleman named Rodney King who, you know, police felt that he wasn't being as cooperative as he should have been, mm-hmm. or, you know, there were allegations that he was intoxicated and things like that. But they gave him a pretty good beat down, and it got caught on videotape. And then that tape became publicized, and it was a big deal in Los Angeles, accusations of police brutality and things like that. So
I can imagine if the whole town was kind of like in that whole childhood, police are always the good guys, you know, mindset. And then all of a sudden something like that comes out. It can be kind of like,
it was kind of a big
jaw dropping.
It was. But everybody saw it, and it looked pretty obvious that the police probably went further than they should have gone.
Right, so, and it was very divisive of the people that said, well, he kept trying to get up, so you know he deserved to be hit with those batons.
And this is a derogatory term, but I can't stand bootlickers. Like, I'm sorry, but police are people, and there are good people, and there are bad people. And sometimes bad people happen to work in the profession of law enforcement. So to sit there and justify every single cop out there and assume that they do no wrong is just, like, you're a bootlicker.
Fair enough.
And
I don't argue. I believe that everybody...
I see it all the time online. Like, there'll be a video of like a cop curb stomping somebody, and there'll be some jerk in the comments that's like, oh, well, he shouldn't have been resisting. And I'm like, dude.
Or there's the people that say, well, you don't know what happened before they turned on the video camera.
Yeah. And you're going to get all that. Now, I believe that there are always, I mean, there's always two sides of every story.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm the same way.
And I believe that we need to pursue the truth. But that doesn't mean that one side just automatically gets a pass, whether it's, you know, a Black Lives mm-hmm. Matter protester or it's the cop.
Right.
Let's do our research. But back
Correct.
To Rodney King.
Yes.
Rodney King gets a massive beatdown mm-hmm. at the hands of Los Angeles Police Department personnel. It's a racial issue because Rodney King is black and the officers, I believe, were all white. But there may have been some others. But the long and the short of it is then charges are brought against these officers. That was excessive use of force, or you violated, you know, LAPD.
They get put on a paid vacation?
Well, here's what happens. They actually go to court.
Okay.
And they get charged.
Okay.
And every single one of them was found innocent.
What?
Yes.
Every single one of them.
I mean, were
found.
They innocent, though? I never saw the video.
You know, I wasn't there, so I'm not even going to speculate. But the long and the short of it is the town was so divided along racial lines and along sort of the, you know, class lines and everything else.
Yes.
That when that happened, when those officers were found innocent, L.A. erupted. L.A. burned.
No, it's kind of like the devil's advocate.
There were riots.
Like, even though, you know, we're kind of breeding cops to be like this in a sense, like at least in today's day and age where we're giving them all these like high powered assault weapons and stuff. And we're creating this like combat mentality that like they're going to be walking around the streets, right, of our own communities with these military style weapons. They're going to be in a military mindset. They're going to be in combat mode. So they're going to be combative when they interact with people. And, you know, like every little like flinch or resist or whatever, they treat as like a hostile environment as opposed to just, you know,
in some cases, the other thing we have, the other thing we have is a war on drugs. And the war on drugs says that there is one side, the good guys, and that's the police. And the other side.
Well, it's got war in the name. Exactly. So there's good guys and bad guys.
Right. But the potential bad guys, because you can't always tell who's on drugs, basically means every citizen until they've proven themselves innocent. It's just insanity.
Well, you could be Freddie. Was it Freddie? Eric Garner, the one in New York?
Well, Freddie Gray was the guy in Baltimore that was given the nickel ride broke. Eric Garner was selling cigarettes and got choked to death.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. Is like they're choking this guy, father of six, out for selling loose cigarettes. Like, this guy's dead for literally selling a loose cigarette. You know how many times I did that? As a teenager outside the mall?
I don't know if I'd say that on national radio. You might get visited. So, it is. It's insane.
Let's jump into this article here.
Yep. So this comes to us from Emergency Management Magazine. Young LAPD cops work in departments shaped by 1992 riots they barely remember. A quarter century later, many young LAPD officers have a child's memories of the riots or no memories at all. Yet they work in a department profoundly shaped by its missteps during that time. And I'm not endorsing their position, but this is, again, what the article is saying. Officer Nancy Rodriguez is far too young to have been on duty during the 1992 Los Angeles riots. Her most vivid memories of that time is of a pink party dress. She was 4 years old. She had recently worn the dress to her birthday party. It was at a dry cleaner near her home in South Los Angeles, and she never saw it again. Rioters set the business on fire. Her parents kept her indoors, and she did not learn the extent of the devastation until years later. Quote, I couldn't believe I was very close to everything that happened. I really didn't realize how crazy it was, said Rodriguez, 29, shortly before going on patrol last week in L.A. Police Department's Olympic Division, which includes most of Koreatown. A quarter century after Los Angeles descended into chaos, many young LAPD officers have a child's memory of the riots or no memories at all. I'm not repeating it. They are. Yet these officers work in a department profoundly shaped by its missteps during that time. In 1992, the senior LAPD commanders of today were just starting to climb the leadership ladder, not high-ranking enough to make big decisions, but experienced enough to be appalled by the department's inaction. While the city went up in flames and looters ransacked stores, more than 60 people lost their lives over 5 days starting on April 29th. At the time, young officers were trained in old-school, big, bad cop ways, chokeholds, hog tying, arbitrary pat downs, a wartime mentality.
And I would say that not a lot has really changed.
Yeah. Again, look at
YouTube.
Other
than now, there's more of it being caught on cell phone video.
Yes.
And, well, I would say that there's more police going to court over, you know, violations of civil rights, but that would be a misstatement.
More might be going to court, but more are probably not being found guilty.
Well, based on the numbers that I've seen, very few of them ever come out of the indictment phase, which means they're not really going to court.
That's a good point. The LAPD is undergoing a generational shift. Fewer rank-and-file officers remember the riots, and fewer have ever policed the old way. 40-year-old police officer would have been 15 in 1992. Even some of today's station captains had not yet joined or were barely out of training. A department that was 59% white in 1992 now roughly mirrors the city it serves. Nearly half of LAPD officers are Latino, 10% are black, and 9% are Asian American. The lessons of history guide the way many things at the LAPD are done, even if the youngsters do not know the ins and outs of that history. Use your mouth before your fists. Baton should be used sparingly. When possible, be friend, not foe. Do not let a street protest get out of hand. Make arrests before it gets to that point. And there's a little bit more.
And, you know, a couple of these things I definitely agree with. You know, don't use your fist before you use your mouth. Rarely use your baton. And, yeah, police should be friendly. I remember being told that, you know, if you wind up getting lost, go find a cop. They're your friends.
Mm-hmm.
855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Possibly time for you and your thoughts if you call in now. And we're going to get back into, hopefully, back into the story about the riots of 1992 in L.A., basically reshaping the way cops in L.A. do their jobs. But first, I want to make sure that I tell you about a way that you can help Free Talk Live by doing things that you were going to do anyway, and that is shopping online. Just start your shopping experience at shop.freetalklive.com. And from there, you can go to Amazon, you can go to Newegg, you can go to Walmart. There are other links there at shop.freetalklive.com.
Can you go to local goods? In can you go there?
That would be the store that Chris runs that, no, they are not an affiliate on shop.freetalklive.com. But when you shop through Amazon or Newegg or any of the other affiliates there at shop.freetalklive.com, then they send a little bit of money to Free Talk Live, basically a finder's fee, and you can bookmark the links, and then you don't have to keep going back to shop.freetalklive.com. Just use the bookmark that you've saved from shop.freetalklive.com. Let's go to the phones where we've got Travis calling in from Peoria, Illinois. Travis, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Yeah, I was wondering if you guys had heard anything about the mass roundup of gays in Chechnya, and they're being imprisoned and tortured.
Yeah, this is a new one to me, so please continue.
I'm kind of curious, how do they determine if someone's gay or not?
According to Human Rights Watch, they've rounded up dozens of men on suspicion of being gay and torturing and humiliating the victims. Some of the men have been forcibly disappeared, and at least three people have died. And The Guardian has reported that an escapee is saying that they keep 30 to 40 people detained in one room and beating and torturing them with electricity.
Oh, wow. So I just pulled something up from the UK Independent from actually about a month ago. Headline, Chechen authorities round up more than 100 gay men. Three people have reportedly been killed. I hate to say this is actually the first time I've heard of this.
Yeah, yesterday was the first I had heard of it. And it shocked me that you guys hadn't heard of it. So I figured I'd pipe in and see what you guys have to say.
Yeah, I don't think that anybody should be rounded up for, you know, whether you want to call it a lifestyle choice or, you know, a personal practice, you know, anything that is not causing unjust harm to another person should not be an arrestable, jailable offense.
I'll call it the epitome of the victimless crime.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If whatever you're doing in the privacy of your own bedroom, whether it's between man, woman, 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 man, just it does, or any other, however you
as long as there's no unjust harm.
Right. As long as everybody is willing.
Right.
I'm sorry. Who cares?
What's the term? Safe, sane, consensual.
The Russian LGBT network is attempting to evacuate people from Chechnya. And there's a Canadian company that is also helping taking funds for that.
Well, that's good.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and they should. Yeah, I've had some issues with the LGBT community, and it's more. I don't support groups that say, because I've been oppressed in the past, now you owe me more rights in the future. You know what I mean? People are people. Everybody should be.
I completely agree with you. I've had the same problem.
Yeah. But in this example, this has nothing to do with that. This is just people being decent people trying to
keep protecting people's rights, period.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you an example of something from the LGBTQ, whatever it is, community. They posted some ad recently looking for somebody to work on a nonprofit that's trying to get like solitary confinement like abolished in the state of Massachusetts, but they put in the advertisement that they were looking for somebody that they encouraged gay people, black people, and women to apply for the position, which I thought was kind of like, if you're really, if you're goal is the solitary confinement, then wouldn't you want the most qualified person who cares about like all of those little?
You would, but unfortunately, there's the EEOC compliance to where some government bureaucrat somewhere says, "Well, you didn't interview enough people that meet these various demographics, so you have to encourage people that meet certain demographics to apply." Even if they might not otherwise be interested in the job. So the reason that companies wind up putting that in ads is because of government.
Right.
Travis, any final thoughts here?
Because when some companies look for a spokesperson that is accepted by more people.
Oh, yeah.
And that could be a marketing reason for doing it, too.
Sure. Yeah. And I get that completely, but when government comes out in the Civil Rights Act, and God forbid you say anything bad about that, or other pieces of legislation that basically impose quotas on companies to say, forget about the best person for the job. If you don't hire a certain percentage of this type of person or person with this color skin, then there's a good chance you may be looked at or sued
if
or taken to court.
If your workforce doesn't adequately represent the community of which you serve.
Right, whatever that means.
Yeah.
You know? And that's it's so arbitrary.
It means
but
you gotta try to please everybody.
More to the point, and back to your point, this is a horrible thing, I encourage...
I just think it needs to be talked about a little bit more so people are more aware for the ability for... people to help.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Travis, thank you for the call. And yeah, this is something that I'm definitely going to do some digging into. Let's get back, Chris, here in the closing moments, get back into the article that you had from the Emergency Management Magazine about the way the LA riots 25 years ago wound up shaping the way that police do their job.
Yeah, and they were basically implying that older police methods, pre-riot, were kind of heavy-handed, they've come to a kinder, gentler police.
Less heavy-handed. I don't think we could call it kinder and gentler, but less heavy-handed, but with different toys.
I'm saying this article absolutely does imply that. Go ahead.
Left off that they went to a trial, but they were found. Did they go to trial and then get found not guilty? Is that how it works? By a jury?
Yes.
By a jury?
Yes.
Huh. And that's why there was the riot, and a lot of the city was on fire. I remember watching this.
George Zimmerman one, right?
I was like 14 at the time, and I remember watching this, and then there was the... video. I forget if it was a news camera that caught this, where the guy in the 18-wheeler got drug out of the truck.
What was his name?
And hit in the face with a brick.
Right.
And then Rodney King went on TV and said, "Can't we all just get along?"
Right.
And he was mocked and ridiculed for saying that.
Because it was a white gentleman who got pulled out of the vehicle in, during these riots. And It was really crazy, and the article continues. The LAPD has been involved in several controversial fatal shootings in recent years, and its critics still complain of heavy-handed tactics. But it's a far different department from what it was 25 years ago. Quote, they learned from the people that have learned from 1992, unquote, LAPD Chief Charlie Beck said of young officers. A change in culture doesn't necessarily mean that the newest recipients of that change in culture understand how it got to where it is. They just know the change in culture. In an interview in his office last week, Beck directed an aide to retrieve a 700-page tome, Lou Cannon's Official Negligence, which the chief termed the definitive book about the riots. The book and others about the riots are required reading for officers in line for promotion. All commanding officers have the books, Beck said. The riots are not part of the official curriculum for the LAPD Academy or other officer training, but instructors sometimes mention them to illustrate the stark contrast with current policing methods and to emphasize the importance of building community ties. In October 1992, a special panel found that the LAPD's response to the riots was, quote, marked by uncertainty, some confusion, and an almost total lack of coordination, unquote.
And the link to this will be posted on the Facebook and the Twitter. And I want to make sure that I mention during this show that earlier today we found out that a good friend of the show, Lee Wright, passed away. So please keep your thoughts and your prayers with his family. This has been Free Talk Live.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the realtor, Mark Warden.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Warden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing, too. Invest in liberty and property. Mark Warden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.